Penguin Audio presents The Deception of the Emerald Ring by Lauren Willig. Read by Kate Redding. Prologue. A watched phone never rings. At least my phone wasn't ringing. The same, unfortunately, could not be said of the man sitting in front of me, whose mobile kept shrieking with all the abandon of an inebriated teenager on a roller coaster. Each time his phone shrilled out Danger Zone from Top Gun, I lunged for my bag. After a mere 10 minutes on the bus, my abs had gotten more of a workout than they had in months. I hauled my computer bag up onto my lap for easier access and slid my hand into the front pocket, just to make sure that the phone was still there. It was. Further inspection revealed that the ringer was on, the volume turned up, and all the little bars indicating signal strength blinking merrily away. Damn. Sticking the phone back in my bag, I listened to the man in front of me recite his weekend's activities for the fifth time. They seemed primarily to involve adventures in alcohol poisoning and an encounter with a burly bouncer that grew more elaborate with each retelling. Craning my head towards the window, I checked the progress of the traffic ahead of us. It hadn't. Progressed, that was. The bus sat as steadily immovable as an island in a tropical sea, placidly parked behind a string of other, equally immobile buses. It didn't improve the situation that the light was green. I knew I should have taken the tube. There had been all sorts of good reasons to choose the bus that morning, as I set out from my Bayswater flat towards the British Library. After all, the tube always broke down, and it couldn't be healthy to spend that much time underground, and the fact that it was actually not raining in England in November needed to be celebrated. And the bus had cell reception, while the underground didn't. I glowered in the direction of my phone. Life would be far more pleasant if I were better at fooling myself. One day. It had only been one day by the calendar, 2 years in terms of agonized phone staring, and about half an hour in boy time. It is a truth universally acknowledged that time moves differently for men. There was, I reminded myself, no reason why Englishmen should differ from their American counterparts in this regard. There was also the fact that Colin didn't have my phone number. But why let reality interfere with a good daydream? And my daydreams. Well, they weren't really the sort of thing one could get into on a public bus. Even if other people, I scowled at the man in front of me who had progressed from bar hopping to amorous adventures, had no such scruples. Besides, if Colin wanted my phone number, he knew how to find it. After a sleepless night alternating between daydream and denial, I had finally admitted to myself just how much I really hoped he wanted it. Colin was, not to put too fine a point on it, the first man who had made my pulse speed up since a breakup of massive proportions the previous winter. Admittedly, when we'd first met, the emotion quickening in my veins hadn't been attraction. Irritation was more like it, and that sentiment at least had been entirely mutual. What it all boiled down to was that I was going through his family's archives, and he didn't want me to. It wasn't prurient interest that drove me to Colin's family papers, but academic desperation, the sort that sets in at some point after the third year of grad school, as the bills begin to mount, teaching bored undergrads loses its luster, and the coveted letters Ph.D. continue to dance a mocking jig just out of reach. No dissertation, no degree. I had nightmares of becoming one of those attenuated grad students who lurk in the basement of the Harvard History Department, surrounded by books so overdue that the library has long ago given up totting up the fines. Every now and then you'll encounter one of them making the long trudge up the stairs to the first floor and wonder who on earth they are and how long they've been down there. I refused to become one of the forgotten basement dwellers of Robinson Hall. Among other things, the vending machine down there had a very limited selection. Unfortunately, the dissertation topic that I had chosen with such naive optimism at the end of my second year proved to be just like its subject, elusive. I was after a trio of spies, the Scarlet Pimpernel, the Purple Gentian, and the Pink Carnation, those daring men in knee-breeches and black cloaks who twirled their quizzing glasses in the face of danger and never failed to confound the agents of the French Republic. Unfortunately, they also confounded me. There was, I discovered, a reason that no one had...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?